This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Ready to pop the question and take advantage of 30% off? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com to get 30% off select lab-grown diamonds. That's BlueNile.com for 30% off lab-grown diamonds. BlueNile.com.
Hello, welcome to the CarCast in Edmonds podcast. I'm Matt, the moderator, DeAndrew, here with Alistair Weaver. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks, Matt. Well, actually, I say I'm good. I'm feeling utterly fried after a week in the desert. We were shooting the Edmonds U-Drags, and it was 105 degrees for two successive days in the desert on an airfield.
Yeah.
So it's like the worst possible place to be.
When just the heat coming off the tarmac and stuff. Yeah, for sure.
Everything. The team did an amazing job. We had like 20 people out there. So the team did an amazing job, but it was brutal. I mean, you sat in the car, the air conditioning is all right. As soon as you turn the air conditioning off for like doing the runs, then you just like feel the sweat.
I've got a couple of questions about that. Before, let me tell you guys about Bet Online. Bet Online is your number one source for the NBA Finals and Stanley Cup playoffs this season. They have every stat, every matchup, even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. When the games are over, you can head on over to the online casino and get in on a game of blackjack or poker, or unwind with over 150 different slot games. Just head to the website to get in on the action and use promo code BELIEVE for your 50% off welcome bonus. It's BLEAV for your 50% welcome bonus off your first deposit. Bet Online, the game starts here. How many cars do you guys usually like bring out, and how many sessions do you try to film when you do the U-Drag stuff? Because it's kind of intensive, but if you're going to be out there for a day, you probably try to get as much as you can.
Yeah, I mean, we typically do sort of 4 to 5 races a day, which is super intensive. But you're right. I mean, it's a big operation. We have a lot of people up there, so we make sure that we maximize the opportunity. If people haven't seen this, get it. It's on our YouTube channel. In fact, we launch one today, which is Civic Type R against Hyundai Elantra N. And the basic premise of this, and I think we talked about this a little bit before on the show, is everybody was doing drag racing, and CarWow and others on YouTube had a lot of success with it. And it was like, okay, but A, there's not a lot of skill involved, particularly now everything has launch control. And B, it sort of favors certain cars. And we've always been about like the overall package. So we sort of sat down and thought about it. And the big driver was the GT500, the Ford Mustang. And that car just kept getting whooped in drag races because he couldn't put his power down. But every time we did like a rolling race, it killed everything else. So we kind of said, how do we kind of square this off? So we came with this U-Drag concept, which is basically drag race from the start, which is more than a quarter mile. Then you've got a break. Then you've got like a sort of extended hairpin. And then you've effectively got a rolling race back to the line. And we came with the concept, found a location that we could do it. And we've been having a lot of fun and a lot of success with it since. So we launched them about every 2 weeks on average.
Okay.
And what we do is sit down and look at all our test numbers from the test track and say, okay, what's a good pairing? So sometimes it's pretty obvious. It's like, okay, like we did Mustang against Z Nismo. And, you know, some of it is a very obvious matchup. And, you know, and then other times we'll look at kind of what was good on a quarter mile speed and what was good in the braking, and then just find unusual matchups where they're likely to be close. So sometimes you get like an EV SUV against a performance car because they're as fast as each other. But then it becomes about braking, about cornering, about everything else. So it's a really full concept. I drove this week. I've done a couple of these. We share it around a little bit, some of the test team, but I like to get my hands dirty on this one. It's good fun to do, but no shortage of pressure when you've got 20 people, it's like 105 degrees. And if you screw up your braking, and like back on the radio saying, oh, I need another run because I didn't quite do it right. And I think everybody imagines that we do like, you know, like a test day and all the rest. The reality is you just don't have the time, the money, and also you don't have the tires and the brakes on the cars. So, you know, we do a couple of dry, we do a dry run or two, and then it's like, right, off we go. And then
you guys switch drivers, because we're trying to compare cars to cars, not driver to driver at this point. It's important for the drivers to be as consistent as possible.
That's right. So we swap cars. And then if it's super close, sometimes you'll get, you know, one car a driver like screws it up a little bit, and then you'll get one car win. If one car is won, and then the other we'll do a third race as a shootout. We could also look at the times and stuff. But you know, we're probably close enough on the driving for it not to make a difference. I know the YouTube comments are always like, hey, this guy's fast, this guy's not fast. The reality is we're all turning in like consistent time. So it's just about matching up the cars and not making a mess of it on the day.
Yeah. No, I like the videos. It looks like fun. I'd love to come out and visit at some point, maybe bring the Mustang out there. But I think water, sunscreen, got to prepare now.
And the whole team did an amazing, amazing job, because it was just a 2-day heat wave exactly when we were filming. And we were watching the thing, and it was like, this is going to be brutal. So it was like factor 70 and slap it on and keep your hat on, keep hydrating. But it's good. It's also good. Where we go is a good, it's a top secret location, but it's a good test of a car, because it's quite a bumpy surface. So most of the cars, you actually, where they've got adaptive damping, you don't want it in the stiffest. Otherwise, it just like bounces you around too much.
Okay.
So you want a little bit of compliance. Then you've got a really heavy brake, which shows off. And also it's like you start to learn about nuances that, couple of the cars there we had this week had carbon ceramic brakes, and you think, oh, that's going to make a big difference. The reality is carbon ceramic brakes often are more about kind of repetitive braking and not wearing and everything else. In terms of brake feel and often stopping power as well, they're not necessarily better. I think that the kind of perception of what they're about is different to the reality. And sometimes the brake feel isn't great.
Notice the difference if you're three passes into it, like if you guys run the car a couple times, switch drivers, run the car, maybe there's still some heat in the brakes.
Yeah, we noticed it this week on an EV where, because you're kind of having mental references where your braking points are, and we use same cars for different races. And there was one EV that remained nameless for now, where we'd used it in a couple of races, we'd recharged it, so it was full of charge, but we just went for the brakes at the same braking point and suddenly realized that you didn't have as much as you used to. Because road car brakes, I mean, this is the thing with track days, and BMW used to be notorious for this, is they're just not really, you know, in terms of the, you know, it's mad, in terms of the brand, the pads, the disc, the basic setup, they're not built for doing, you know, proper, like, you know, full braking and everything else on a repetitive, you know, repetitive basis. They all tend to overheat. So, you know, but and then the other thing is you realize is rear wheel drive versus all wheel drive, particularly when you're pulling out of a slower corner, you just realize the benefits of all wheel drive. Because on the rear wheel drive cars, it's just wait, and you're sat in it and you're kind of like wait.
Yeah.
And then you know, you're getting oversteer, and oversteer of course feels heroic, but then you're losing time. And the all wheel drive cars just oof, you know, front axle kicks in.
And all wheel drive off the line, because you're not on a prepped, you know, quarter mile drag strip or any sort.
No, we sweep the surface, because otherwise, if not, like, it's just full of debris. But that's it. There's nothing.
You don't bring an EV out there with a plug on it and just hit the leaf blower, like the back of the Lightning with an extension cord and a leaf electric leaf blower. You could get it done pretty quickly.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. I'll pass that on. We tried it. We did try one in the dirt, because we were like, what about if we do it in the dirt? We tried the same concept in the dirt. It was a disaster, because all that happened was we just ended up in a plume of dust. So when you did like the U-turn, nobody could see anything.
I was thinking, I was like, it's tough to film when you do that. So
it's like it was a really great idea on paper.
Okay. So speaking of racing, I want to talk a little bit about the Mustang GTD. We've been hearing about this car for a while. Now we're seeing more information about the car. They've been testing it at the Nürburgring. They're bringing a handful of the racing car versions, the GT3 versions of this car. This, the GTD is the street car, but it's based off of the racing car that's heading to Le Mans this weekend for the 24 Hours of Le Mans. So let's look at the street car and kind of get our thoughts on this thing now that it's, we can see the interior, we know what engine's in it, we know what the suspension looks like, we know what they're doing with it, and we know more about the pricing of it as well, right?
Yeah, it's yeah, it's not cheap, right? Was it, they're saying 350, is it 325 or 350 plus?
They're saying about
plus,
325
plus options. Yeah, plus then they'll have like the, yeah, then the performance pack.
There was like a performance pack and the aero pack or the carbon fiber pack, which when this car was being debuted, I sort of heard grumblings going, it's going to be about 300 grand, but the performance pack and the aero pack or the carbon pack, they're about 50 grand each. So they're like, expect 400,000.
Yeah. And if you're buying this as a collector's piece, which let's face it, that's
you are.
The main driver for buying it. I think, you know, it's a bit like the Vizac pack and something like a 911 GT3 RS. You've almost got to have it to protect your investment. So I don't think you're going to see many walking out you get it at the showroom to go to a dealership? I guess it does. Walking out the showroom.
You do. So you fill out an application, you apply for it. You don't have to own like a 4GT to get it. The idea was to get it in the hands of some different customers. But yeah, but then you go to the dealer and they present you with the car and hopefully it's a nice presentation because it's a very expensive car. But the interior, let's talk about the interior because it looks a lot like the Mustang interior and a little tough to tell completely from, you know, like the photo we're looking at right now at YouTube, but it looks pretty much like a stock Mustang interior. The shifter is different in this car. It's got some carbon fiber on the dash and on the center console and the steering wheel. The drilled out looks like a paddle, like aluminum paddle to shift. But it's not like it's been completely changed or even, you know, the door panels and stuff aren't like slathered up in leather and Alcantara. And it feels like they could have done a few more things at this price point. Like,
yeah, they basically got their 3D printer out and done a few paddles. Yeah. I mean, part of me says it's kind of okay because Mustang interiors work and you've got a cup holder and actually you could go, you know, there's no trunk as far as I'm aware.
Yeah.
So it's probably not a car that you're going to take, you know, if you're going to go long distances, maybe there's a bit of room behind the seats or something where you can stuff some soft bags. Yeah. I don't know. It's like the big reveal of the interior and the big reveal of the interior is it's a Mustang interior. But there is some cool, the only thing that I think is quite cool is they've got a little window so you can watch the suspension working. And
yeah,
I mean, the reality is in the volumes that you're building it, it's really hard to do something kind of bespoke and really, really expensive. So it probably makes sense and it's probably not going to deter potential customers, but it's not quite as exciting as some of us hoped. But I don't know, like the original GT, I followed quite a bit of that project. I remember going to the underground bunker where they designed it in Detroit. I think you may remember that it was like the last great auto show surprise, the GT, when they unveiled it at Detroit and nobody saw it coming. But they'd done it in this underground bunker up in Michigan, and I went and had a tour of it, and it was really cool. It was like literally like three people had the key and in you went, and so the very few people within the business knew about the project. But the GT, I mean, you drove one and I drove one on the circuit and I drove it on the road. It was just a race car that was made road legal-ish and ultimately bought by collectors. And we're now seeing, you know, them going for, you know, tripling their money on if you'd bought one. You know, this is a slightly different proposition. I think this is a little bit more usable, but it's a, you know, it's more of a halo car for the Mustang. And of course these are all built so you can go and race at Le Mans, but the GT wasn't, as a car, like as a thing, it wasn't that great. It was great on a track because it was like a race car, but you know, the engine didn't sound that great and it just felt a bit crude. And cool thing, undeniably so, but glad it
very, very cool, super collectible. We were doing the 24-hour war documentary It was Ford versus Ferrari. Before the Ford v Ferrari movie came out, we had done the documentary, worked with Ford, worked with Ferrari, got them all involved, which was a big feat because Ferrari didn't really want to participate in a film like that. Like, why would you want to participate in a documentary about a story that you lost? Right. So, how I understood it was because they get approached, like Ferrari, for example, gets approached all the time. Every week, somebody's reaching out going, we want to film some stuff. We want to do a TV show. We want to do a video, a documentary, we want to do whatever. And we had been reaching out to them for almost a year. And then someone high up in the chain saw the Paul Newman film that we did, that documentary, and said they really liked it. And then reached out and said, we like what you did. We get, like, you're not some hack little production company. Like, there's something good there. So they got involved with it. And as we were filming some interviews with Ford management, we filmed it at Adam Carolla's location. And Ford showed up with some cars and stuff for the background. And in the background, we had prototypes of Ford Focus RS, yep, the GT350, and the Ford GT. And they brought it, like, in an enclosed trailer, and we rolled it in, and Henry Ford III and a couple of their designers and engineers were all there as part of the film, and Bill Ford and all that. They were all there filming stuff with the car in the background, and our guys, our production guys, because it was our place, our production guys were able to light it up, put the cars in the background. And yeah, at some point I said, can we go for a ride here? And my first experience in the Ford GT was a prototype car. Like, the dash, the gauges and stuff were, like, connected but laying on the floor. They weren't installed in the dash. And yeah, and so we have a couple pictures of the exterior of the car because it ended up being in the film, but I couldn't take pictures or show anything from inside the car. But we drove around for a minute, so there was a, you know, sort of a foggy morning in Glendale, California, where there was a Ford GT running around the neighborhood before anybody else really saw it. And it was kind of exciting. And then whatever, like a year later, Ford sent one over to drive for the day. I didn't get to take it on the track, but I was able to drive it, you know, basically all around town. And you're right, like a little stiff, definitely similar to the McLaren, like Senna, you hear every little pebble on the road just banging off the carbon fiber on the underneath the car. But the front axle lift is very fast.
It's hydraulic, isn't it? It's like, yeah, boom, which is basically what you do in a Le Mans pit stop. You don't, you know, it's just you just want to pop the thing up as quickly as possible. That's funny. I don't think we even knew each other back then, but I was actually filming a documentary about the development of the Focus RS as well. I spent 4 years following that car.
Yeah.
Which was, it's still on YouTube. If you Google Rebirth of an Icon, you can see all the series. And it was fascinating. Somebody like me who used the end product to actually really get involved in a team as they're developing a car over a number of years, and to see the drama associated with that. And we had engines blowing up. We had, you know, financial challenge, we had cars not being signed off, you know, there was then like additional, there was a period where the car was supposed to be, I remember there was a point where it's all in the documentary, and to their credit, Ford let us run the whole thing. You know, one of my challenges with it, I said, look, if we're going to do this, the problem is, you know, you're going to want to kind of, like, everything that happens bad, somebody's going to get involved and say, no, it reflects badly on the company, it's not happening. To their absolute credit, they said, we want to tell the real story of how difficult this is to develop it. And there was a great moment where we were all in Germany, and Raj Nair, who at the time was basically signing off all Ford products, now works for Multimatic on the Le Mans program. And he came in and he was supposed to sign the car off, and he basically came upstairs and basically got the whole team there and said, it's not good enough, I'm not signing it off. Where's the pops and farts? Where's the noises? Where's this? Yeah. And it was fascinating just to sit there, and everybody's a bit like, whoa. And a lot of these guys, you know, it's just senior people within the organization, senior engineers, and like everybody's like, "Whoa, hang on."
Yeah.
And then we had to go back to the team that was basically paying me, and I said, "Look, we've got a problem here because we've basically run out of money and the car's not signed off." So we had to scrape around, because there's like, now it's going to be signed off in America, and up at a circuit near Detroit. So we then had to like find the money to fly out to Michigan to go and
to finish the documentary.
Grand Rapids, somewhere to go and go and finish the documentary. And it's like if this doesn't get signed off today, like we're gonna, I don't know what we'll do, a bit of voiceover.
Yeah, yeah. In text later, like the car was signed off.
Yeah, the car was signed off. Everything was great, but yeah, it was a. And they at the same time as they were developing that, they were also developing the GT, the GT350, which is the flat plane crank car, having many problems, with that engine. And so really, really interesting to see the kind of behind the scenes how you develop a car. And also, what was interesting is, I know we're getting off topic, but it's an interesting story. They basically don't have access. The access to other people's cars is really challenging. So when you work in the media world, you say, oh, no, I've got a Honda Civic Type R. Let me go and get an Elantra N. And, oh, can I have this and can I have that? And you put these cars together because they're all accessible through the media fleets. If you're developing a car, you can ring up, Honda and say, oh, by the way, can I have a Civic Type R? And, sometimes there's kind of like, we'll scratch your back and they do swapses. A lot of the time that they can't, or they go to like renting them from third parties, but then the third parties have got to get them. And it becomes really difficult to have like the proper comparison vehicles. I remember talking to the GT team and it's like, oh yeah, we haven't driven the McLaren 675 LT. And I was like, oh, it's quite a big difference to the normal car.
Yeah.
And they couldn't get one. And apparently they did buy a Ferrari 458 Speciale. And apparently I don't know the full extent. Nobody would tell me quite how they'd done it, but I think they'd like had some fake customer or something. So anyway, they had this 4-5, which apparently Ferrari had gone nuts when they found out they had it. So there's all these like little games being played, but it was a great story. And the upshot was, Focus RS, I think, was a great car. Still is a great car. GT was less accessible, obviously, because it was so much money. And now you have GT. It's fun that a mainstream manufacturer is actually doing these projects. I know they're a load of money. I know they're just like collector's things and they'll pop up at Sotheby's in 10 years' time, but it's still a cool car. It's still a cool thing to be involved in.
I mean, it's cool to hear that you got so much access during that documentary of creating that, of the Focus RS, and got to tell the full story, because typically they are a little shy about doing it and don't want to show a lot of stuff that isn't really production ready. Like I said, we had the GT350, as you were saying, the flat plane crank car there during the filming as well. And that car was pretty much done, but they said you can't open the hood and photograph it because it's a prototype. And we opened the hood and they were showing us. And I go, well, what's not ready? What can't we photograph? And they said it had the wrong oil cap on it. and they're like you can't show that. I can't show the oil cap. I don't even know if it was the right oil cap with the wrong sticker or no sticker, or this says oil fill on it.
Didn't have like a Honda badge on it or something.
Yeah, but like I don't know where they got it from, but they're like, you can't show that. And they're probably right, because you're right, somebody would probably look at it and zoom in and be like, that's from a Corvette, or whatever, like the oil cap, because the supplier didn't change the knurled version of the oil cap, right, to be specific to the Ford product, something silly like that. But
it's funny. I remember driving from Colorado down to Arizona, and the GT350 spat it, some pipe fell off, it spat its oil all over a car park of like a Target or something. We all had to go and buy kitty litter, like having like kitty litter and a brush in the car park. So a lot of it's in the documentary. And, but at the end of the day, you ended up with two great, great products. I think the GT350, I think, will be, already is a classic, I suppose. And Focus RS, if you've never driven one of those, like manual. And very interesting, when we were talking a couple of weeks ago about the Hyundai Ioniq 5N, one of the chief engineers in Europe on the Focus RS, because it was a project that was done in Europe and the US, is now, I think, he's managing director of Hyundai's engineering in Europe, and was heavily involved in the Ioniq 5N. And he was obsessed, a guy called Tyrone Johnson, lovely guy. And, he did, it just shows how like you get the influence of these key individuals. Focus RS was basically trying to be a Group B rally car from the 80s. And the Hyundai Ioniq 5N is basically the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's so a cool car. I love a Focus RS.
To GTD, and it kind of shows you sort of the financials behind the scenes of developing a car like this. You could take a Mustang, put it on the production line, and the production line cost of a vehicle versus the hand-built version of the vehicle that Multimatic's putting together, right? Even when you start looking at like the dash and the seats and whatever, where I don't know if these cars get finished at Ford or all of those pieces go to Multimatic, but yeah, you know,
we should explain Multimatic does Ford's Le Mans race cars and built the GT. So they are, yes, they are separate, but very heavily linked. And, yeah, they're sort of, yeah, everything gets hand built, everything's bespoke, 3D printing, all that good stuff. So you can understand why it's so much money. And obviously, you're not amortizing the development costs across, I mean, how many Mustangs they sell a year now? It's a lot less than they used to, but it's still tens of thousands.
Yeah.
You know, like you're not amortizing the development costs across, you know, hundreds of thousand vehicles over a lifespan. You know, you've got a few hundred. So,
yeah. I don't know where they are. Somewhere around 100,000 a year, Mustangs, like
total.
Much of
that, I can't remember,
you know, with
now,
the EcoBoost and all the various versions, yeah, somewhere around there.
There's a lot of tourists in higher forcing into higher cars.
24-hour Le Mans, that's coming up this weekend. I want to get into that, but let's just take a quick break. We'll be right back.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, Le Mans coming up. This is always kind of an exciting thing, but also kind of weird to watch because it's over the course of 24 hours. And I think you can stream it online. I think Max is showing it. HBO Max is probably showing it, but I don't know exactly how much they're showing or if it's just going to play consistently. Because I don't know that they've ever had it on that app before.
Well, I think it used to be on Motor Trend. Motor Trend used to run it. And of course, Motor Trend then got bought out. The whole thing got bought out by Time Warner. I think that includes HBO. I think it's like one of those big corporate things.
Yeah, Discovery Plus and Motor Trend and streaming. Yeah. It's all on the Max app now.
Yeah,
right? Which so is... it's all kind of one thing.
It's if you've been to Le Mans? You've ever been to the race?
No, I haven't.
I mean, I used to go every year. It's a strange event in that it's in France, but very British. You know, like okay. You get, and the whole thing, it's like a big drive out. So that, you know, everybody, you get on the tunnel underneath the English Channel or on the ferries, and it's just full of people in 911s. And, you know, basically any car enthusiast in the UK, they just fire up their classic or their sports car. And off you go to Le Mans, and then people camp and all sorts of stuff. I can't even remember how many times. And it's just an amazing, it's an amazing weekend. In the night, you can go out onto the Mulsanne Strait and you can get right up against the barrier. You just got, you know, cars coming at you at 200 miles an hour in the dead of night. And, you know, also it's a big, you know, it's a big drinking event. So if you're not racing, then basically like everybody's totaled on the beers from, you know, fairly early on. But it's an amazing event. It's worth checking out on TV. It's different, like Daytona, and that is different in as much that Daytona is a circuit. The thing about Le Mans that you have to kind of wrap your head around is that, yes, there are bits which are a race circuit, but a lot of it is just public road, even to this day, the Mulsanne Strait and everything else. So it has that kind of unique feel. It's in the French countryside. It's probably kind of, I've been to the car race many times. I've also been to the bike race, the bike 24-hour race, which makes the car race look like a kind of, you know, gentleman's outing, or I shouldn't say gentleman, you know, like a, when I say gentleman's, I mean like a rich person's outing, whereas the bike race is a bit more hardcore, I should say.
You know, the thing that like comes up with sort of going to Monterey Car Week and having all the vintage cars there and racing and at the auctions. We talk a lot about Le Mans cars, Le Mans winning cars. What does that mean? And, you know, back in the day, we didn't have sort of these categories like this hypercar group and LMP2. So the sports cars were winning Le Mans, not just in their class, but overall. And it's been quite a while now that any of the sports cars, now the GT3 cars, have won overall, because all these crazy prototype cars are so fast. And I, for me, that takes a little something away from it. But it also makes the GT3 class kind of the most exciting for me. That, I mean, because look at the LMP cars, like they're just.
Yeah, I mean, they're basically the cars at the front, you know, when you strip them away, are basically almost like single seater racing cars with bodywork.
Yeah, you know, and all the same.
But incredible to watch. I mean, if you go there this year, you think about, I remember last time I was there, I think it was like a 488 Ferrari or something. But you think about like the fastest road, a really fast road car, and then you turn it into a really fast race car. And then you have these like prototype racers, and the difference in speed is just breathtaking. I know when Porsche did their Le Mans car a couple of years ago, when took away some of the restrictions that the regulations imposed, and it was as fast as an F1 car, I think around Spa, wasn't it? And basically set a new lap record. These things are incredible, the ones at the front. And then at the back, you've still got the, you know, the GT3 cars. You still have this era, you know, you still have a lot of more kind of, shall we say, amateur racers in there. So you've got this kind of contrast between, you know, the sort of ultimate pros at the front, and then a bunch of, you know, a mixture of amateurs and wealthy individuals and stuff. So it just all creates this really exciting atmosphere, and there's always something to watch. And, you know, the cars look cool. They sound amazing. I remember like years ago, like they had the V10 Panos, this front engine Panos car. And like, always kind of like trying to stay up for 24 hours, especially after a few beers, always difficult. So you always try and like sleep for 3 or 4 hours, and this bloody Panos would come around, like this V10. And it's like, oh my, it was like sort of some sort of, you know.
Are you yelling?
Teacher.
Keep it down out there. I'm trying to sleep.
Like, I mean, it starts off at 4 o'clock in the afternoon or 3 o'clock when the race starts. It's like, hey, look at that. It's amazing. Sounds incredible. You get to 2 o'clock in the morning after a few beers. It's like, no, it's just like giving me a headache. But the best time at Le Mans, I suppose maybe it's Big Ten as well. The best time, if you watch, and again, if you're watching it, you also the time zone, there's what, 9 hours if you're on the West Coast difference. But the amazing thing, like you get, grab a couple of sleep, you wake up in the morning, it's like 6 a.m. in the morning, the sun's just coming up, and they call that happy hour when the cars are absolutely on the limit. That's the time when the fastest times are set, because the weather's cool, but the drivers can see everything again because the light's coming up. That is the most exciting time. Like, you know, day is breaking, everybody's absolutely on it. And just the pressure, like the driver pressure, I always find amazing. The guys can be running, you know, 3 hour stints and things like that, you know, if they double stint or sometimes a triple stint. And I remember, like, I think it was Lotterer when Audi, when it started raining and he was winning the race by not by much, and just the pressure, you could see, almost feel it on the onboard. And we were all in the Audi pits. And yeah, it's a mega event. If you've never seen it, I'd encourage you to like watch a little bit. And it's a great pilgrimage if you can ever make it over there.
In the GT3 class, we're going to have Mustangs, Corvettes, Porsches, Ferraris, McLarens, Aston Martin, Lexus in that class. Maybe that's a...
Yeah, and they are much more associated, you know, you can associate them much more. And that's why the GTD's been built for, you know, because it's the Le Mans car that basically is on the road. And yeah, it's a cool thing. And you've got a lot of, you know, XF1 drivers, and, you know, they had the NASCAR there last year, sadly not there this year. So there's always like something to be interested in. And it's just a really...
Certainly from Ford's perspective, you know, they've got, I think, 3 or 4 cars out there with different teams. And it's important for them to win or at least podium, because they're selling the GTD as a Le Mans car. And if you go, yeah, it was a failed Le Mans car, every one of them broke, you know,
they've probably got a couple of years at it, but the GTDs is driven by a guy that I used to race against.
I was just looking at this guy's name that came up, and it kind of got your attention.
Ben Turk. Yeah. I raced against him in Caterhams, which if people don't know, these like based on a Lotus 7, they were, you know, really simple, but incredible racing. And this guy turned up as like, I think he was like 20 or something. We were all sort of older gentlemen and lady racers. And, you know, he kind of turned up and it was like, you know, he had put on his Facebook page how many races he was intending to win and all the rest of it. It was like, yeah, I might be old. I might be, you know, I think at the time I was like mid 30s. I was like, okay, I'm never going to be a pro racer, but you know, we've done this a little while and most of us have like some sense of what we're doing. So yeah, first season he struggled a little bit and it was a bit of an eye opener. I remember he was trying to get around the outside of me at one corner, and so I just took him off just like, yeah, early season, let's put a marker down. And then here he is racing at Le Mans in a GTD.
I was going to say, so you woke up on that kid 20 years ago, but now you're an automotive journalist and he's racing Le Mans.
Yeah, exactly. No, I should have continued, Matt. I should have, you know, maybe my great, great untapped talent, you know.
Could have been there. There's a couple of tall drivers.
Could have been a contender.
Yeah.
Anyway, good luck to him. Maybe goes well.
I agree. It sounds like he's been doing it. It's getting it done. And now he's out there and he's a part of this team. That's going to be fantastic. So yeah, I'm looking forward to Le Mans. I hope I can figure out how to watch it. And like you said, watch some of the key points, watch the early morning, and then watch the last, you know, handful of laps for sure. Yeah. If you won't be able to watch all of it, it'll be kind of fun to see. And it's always such a good story. If you really think about the collectability in cars, you know, down the line, Le Mans is the ultimate in collectability when it comes to racing cars. And I don't know exactly how it became that way, but it's just been that way for a long time. If you have a Le Mans winning car or even a Le Mans podium car, it's a huge increase in value.
Yeah, I think it's just heritage. You think about the GT40s and everything else going back in the day. You know, we're going to go and beat Le Mans, you know, Henry Ford. We're going to go to Le Mans. We're going to go to Europe and beat Enzo Ferrari and all this kind of folklore that just developed over the years. And Jaguars winning with D-types and C-types. And it's just, you know, the heritage, the story. And of course, like Steve McQueen movies and things like that don't harm the myth and the legend. And yeah, it's a very cool event.
We were talking a minute ago. I think you got, for some reason, you got a little bit more seat time. How did you find yourself back into a Cadillac CTS-V?
How did I find back in a Cadillac CTS-V? Well, it was, without giving the game away, it was one of the U-Drags cars. This was a Blackwing.
Okay, the CTS-V Blackwing.
Yeah, it's...
Because it's been a minute since anybody's really talked about it. But
yeah, maybe we'll hold this one back, and then when we do the U-Drags, we can talk about it a little bit.
We're gonna have to talk a little bit more about it.
Because it's a good, what I would say, it's what, 600 and something horsepower. It's one of those cars. There are bits of it inside where you get in and think this is really, you know, the whole touchscreen is still like GM, feels like it's taken straight out of a.
Yeah. You know, now we said Tahoe CTS-V, or something. But.
CTS, CT5, CT5, I was going to write, CT5V Blackwing. Yeah. It's not easy to say.
And the 4 is cool too, the smaller one. But
yeah, I think the 4 is probably where it's where it's at, but from a price point perspective, because the Black Wing's sort of 90 grand and the one that we had was 130 because it had a bit of carbon and a bit of leather. And but it was really fun. And it is the last, maybe this is a good closing, you know, this is a good bombshell on which to end the show, but it is the last V8 manual car on the market. It's the 6.2 litre supercharged V8, which was in the Corvette ZR1. Sadly, our car was an auto, but it is the last V8 manual.
Yeah. And I was thinking about that for a minute, going, you know, you can't get the Corvette in a manual right now. And there's pretty much no more Camaro. But if you want that engine package, like the CT5 Blackwing is kind of, that's it. That's the only option. And you can still get that. You can still go in and get it. And you're already going to see some bits that are dated on it. And the interior is not the best thing in the world. And like you were saying, the infotainment system and the touchscreen and all that stuff seems a little kind of dated, but especially at that price point, you get into 100,000 and change. You're like, the interior is not quite like, just doesn't feel like Audi or something that's going on in there, you know,
but it's a very cool car.
Yeah. It's a cool car. All right. I don't know if we had anything else on the docket for today, but there was a couple updates to BMW, two series and the
M2. Two series. M2's had a bit of a M2's had a bit of a tweak, a bit more power. So it's nearly as much power as the M3 and M4 now. Still not the prettiest car in the world. Civic Hybrid. If you go to edmunds.com/news, you've got all the latest there.
Yeah, this new Civic Hybrid, this is going to be an important car for Honda, right? I mean,
yeah, it is. I mean, the Civics, we're big fans of the Civic. It's just a really nice, you know, it's a really nice, affordable car. And, you know, the world needs more nice, affordable cars. And, you know, it's obviously it's compact, but, you know, there's enough space for most people. And it's a nice little thing.
And when you guys did your initial sort of look at the car, I don't know if you did the full test on it yet. If so, we can get into that later. But they're aiming for 50 miles per gallon, right?
Yeah,
that's getting close to the new norm with the economy hybrids from Toyota and Honda and probably some others.
To be honest, like, you know, these cars, particularly because they're not SUVs, can get easily overlooked, but they're a really nice, well-sorted, economical, affordable car. So we're big fans. And, you know, now they've got Apple CarPlay and all that sort of stuff. You know, you're not really not missing out on much. It's you're basically using the same interfaces as you are in a Bentley.
Yeah, that's a good point. And as everybody starts to use like either Apple software, Google software, companies.
Well, how does the navigation work? Well, the navigation's Google Maps or Apple Maps, and it's through CarPlay. So, you know, the phone's going to work perfectly. You can listen to your podcast. The difference between, you know, how you differentiate luxury, and maybe this is a good subject to come back to, is, you know, we're big fans of the Civic, really big fans of the Civic. It's just a nice, sensible car.
Yeah. All right, I think we're going to wrap it up on that. Is there anything else that's coming up? You got some new drag videos that you got to go back and
edit. We got some new drag videos going live today. We've got the Ineos thing that we talked about last week is live. Edmunds.com/news. Check out the YouTube channel, all the usual stuff.
We've been getting some great feedback from people on the Ineos. So if you've listened to the podcast, definitely go back and watch the Edmunds video on that, because as you pointed out last week, it's the full gamut of the video. They were on the test track and then off-road. And it's nice to kind of see it all in one video, and you can kind of jump around to the sections that you want to see. So check that out for sure as well. All right, guys, I think that's it. Check it out. Edmunds.com/news is where you want to go to get a recap of a lot of what we've been talking about here. And of course, Edmunds.com for all your shopping, buying, car shopping, used and
needs.
New.
Yeah, needs. Car shopping and selling needs these days.
There you go. It's used and new and all of the information you want. All right, guys, thanks so much. Until next time, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.